Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, which is entitled Attaining the Supreme, text 6. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam.
Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam.
Jajadyante kalevaram. Tam tam aivaiti kunteya. Sada tat bhava bhavataha. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam. Jajatyante kalevaram. Tam tam evaiti kunteya. Sada tat bhava bhavataha. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam. Tyajantyante kalevaram. Tam tam evaiti kunteya. Sada tat bhava bhavataha. Yam yam, whatever, va'api, at all, smaran, remembering, bhavam, nature, tyajati, gives up, ante, at the end, kalevaram, this body, tam tam, similar. Eva, certainly, eti, gets, kunteya, O son of Kunti, sada, always, tat, that, bhava, state of being, bhavataha, remembering. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Purport. The process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person who at the end of his life quits his body thinking of Krishna attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Maharaj Bharata, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of his life, and so in his next life he was transferred into the body of a deer. Although as a deer he remembered his past activities, he had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If in one present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental, spiritual, not material. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the end of one's life. Om Akyanta Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakra Jatan Sahagana Raganathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Sade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our consciousness and may our words be aligned with Guru Parampara. May Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased with us coming together and hearing Srimad Bhagavad Gita together. May all the devotees be benefited hearing Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. So, this eighth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Different acharyas have named the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita in different ways. They don't always give the same title, even in Sanskrit. So a common title for this chapter, the eighth chapter, Akshara Parabrahma Yoga. And Prabhupada here is translating that. Attaining. Yoga means to unite, to connect. So Prabhupada here is saying attaining. Attaining what? Akshara Parabrahma. The imperishable, supreme spirit, God. So this chapter is about how to connect, how to attain the supreme. Prabhupada calls this chapter Attaining the Supreme. So how is that done? In the last chapter, Krishna says, Prayana Kale Picha Mam Tevidur Yukta Chaitasaha. He says that I can be known even at the time of death. Why does it say even at the time of death? Because it may not be easy. It may not be easy to remember Krishna at the time of death. Srila Prabhupada, I'd like to quote a verse from King Kulashekar. You know this verse. I have it here. Krishna tvadiya padapankaja pancharantam adyayvyame vishatumanasaraja hamsa prana prayana samaye kapavata pithai kandavaradana vidos maranam kutaste. Prabhupada often quoted this. My dear Krishna, Please allow me to die immediately so that the swan of my mind may be encircled by the stem of your lotus feet. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked, how will it be possible for me to remember you? So we can imagine at that time, it may be very difficult to concentrate the mind on Krishna. So Prabhupada would often quote this, saying, now, while I have a body that's more or less comfortable and a sound mind, and I'm able to think of you and your glories, let me go now. You know, because it doesn't always happen that way. We don't know. Actually, I have... my grandmother is 99 years old right now. And so I asked my father recently, you know, what's new? How's she doing? And he said, she's now praying to die. But she's been praying that for 3 years. She can't die. Even the time, you know, some people are afraid to go, some people want to go. But this is, we're completely dependent on Krishna at that time. So, even at the time of death, one can fully concentrate their mind on Krishna. When Arjuna hears this, at the beginning of this chapter, he says, Chakatam, how is that so? How to do that? How can we actually remember Krishna at that very difficult time? So now Krishna answers this question, but he first describes a very important principle in this verse. He's giving a principle, a spiritual principle. Principles are not Hindu or Christian. There's no such thing as an American principle, an Indian principle, a Buddhist principle. Principle is just a truth that exists always and for everyone. So nothing sectarian. This verse is simply about the nature of consciousness. Prabhupada would often say, this is a great science, this is a great spiritual science. And he also said, especially when he first arrived in New York, that I'm not here to change anybody's religion. Actually, religion is one. Religion is one, but when it comes down into this material world, it necessarily divides into different paths, different ways, because it's going into different parts of the world where there are different cultures and different mentalities, different times, different circumstances, different places, so that one truth comes in different forms, so that everybody has an opportunity to reconnect to the Lord. So Prabhupada would often say, this religion is one, and it's a great science. The difficulty is, the differences between the religions can only be reconciled on a higher level of consciousness. That's the problem. If we're not at that higher level of consciousness, we see nothing but differences and no way to cooperate, no way to see eye to eye. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains there are three obstacles that cause divisiveness in the religions. Three obstacles that have to be overcome. The first obstacle, he says, is visual. Visual. You see someone of a different kind of person, different skin color, or maybe different hairstyle. You know, look at the different religions. Buddhists shave their head completely. Vaishnavas keep a little tuft in the back. And we see these differences and we think this is different. You know, Muslims will keep a beard and shave the mustache sometimes. And traditional Hindus would keep a mustache and shave the beard. So who's right? Who's following the right? You know, everyone is doing something a little different. You know, so this is the visual difference. It's very basic, but some people can't go beyond it. They see a difference in appearance, and they think this is a different path, a different religion. But for most of us, that should be pretty easy to overcome. That's the first, the visual. The next one is a difference in the rituals or in the practices. You know, it's very different. You enter a church, you have to take off your hat, right? Some temples you enter, you have to put on a hat. You ever been to Sikh temple? They give you a hat to wear when you walk in. You have to put on a hat. You know, Jewish tradition also too. They have yarmulke, something to cover your head. So some religions saying take off from your head, the others say put on. So which is right and which is wrong? They seem opposite. Right? But the real thing is to see that these are different forms. These are different forms of offering respect. It may take a different form. Some religious people, the priests wear black. In other traditions, you should wear white. Again, looks like total opposite. So differences in practice too. Some people pray. How do different religions practice? Some are offering, bowing down, you know, three times a day. Somebody is kneeling. You go into a church, you're on your knees. Vaishnav, full dandavats, fully flat on the ground. All different ways. But you have to see the bhakti, saragrahi. What is the essence of what's being done? And not to be caught up on the different manifestations of that essence. Now, those are two, visual and the practice and the ritual. Now, the third one is the hardest one to overcome. This is the three obstacles that cause divisiveness in religions that have to be overcome. So the third one is conceptual. There's a difference in teachings. Now, how is that overcome? That's more difficult, right? Somebody's saying there's reincarnation. Somebody's saying there's just one life. Somebody's saying there's a soul. Somebody's saying there's no soul. The Buddhist, they have this term, anatma, that there is no soul. We say there's a soul. So now how is this reconciled? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, that one can only be reconciled when a person comes into the state of samadhi, when his consciousness is so purified and so clean and so clear that they're actually able to accommodate even the differences in teachings. They can see. They can see the reason for the differences. They can see from a higher perspective. They can see the whole. With the lower vision, we only see what's in front of us, our thing. And we see the opposite somewhere else. But this is actually possible, that even on a very high level of consciousness, one can see the unity. One can see that there's actually one religion. But it's necessarily taking different forms. And sometimes the teachings also have differences, but that can also be accommodated. So this verse, it is just a universal principle, talking about the nature of consciousness, right? We'll read it again. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. So the term is svabhava. Svabhava means one's state of consciousness. We all have a particular state of consciousness. What's the biggest obstacle on the spiritual path? The greatest obstacle? It's our own consciousness. That's the biggest obstacle. The obstacles aren't outside of us. The biggest obstacles is a particular state of consciousness that has to be overcome. You know, there's a description of the chitta. The consciousness is like a pond of water. And there are so many particles floating in that pond. Those particles are like samskaras. Samskaras are like past impressions. And when they come to the surface, it takes the form of a desire suddenly comes, and you have particular desires, I have particular desires, they're different. We think we're choosing all our desires, but actually the way it's described, there are samskaras that are already in the heart. They come to the surface and take the form of a desire. Those samskaras are there because of previous life, activities, thoughts, feelings. So it appears we're very free. But that's not the truth. We're very limited. Samskaras comes up, we have a desire. We think this is my desire, I want to do this. We can't even help it most of the time. So when you have a desire and it comes to the surface, then you're impelled to act in a certain way. And what does that do? You act in a certain way, and then there's a reaction that feeds back into the svabhava, the nature. So a reaction comes back into you, and in this way it's like a cycle. Samskaras are there, they come up as desires, I act on those desires, there's a reaction comes back into my nature. And in this way we're caught in this cycle. You see, this is why we're caught in the cycle of birth and death. Is because there's a big cycle, the wheel of birth and death, very big. But that wheel exists because inside of me there's also a small wheel. There's also this small cycle of the this interaction within the subtle body, which keeps feeding back in. And then I act, another reaction. And then I act, another reaction. We're caught in this way. And that svabhava, that nature that we have, is causing everything in our lives. It's causing everything. You know, it's like a magnetic field. You know, a magnetic field always has two characteristics. It attracts certain things that are in harmony with it, and it repels other things that are not in harmony with it. That's what our consciousness does. We can only take in things that are actually in harmony with it, and we reject things that are not in harmony with it. This is rag and dvesh. There's an attraction and there's a repulsion. You know, so these characteristics are there. So we have this idea, it feels like this, right? This is how most people think. That I'm somehow thrown into this world and I'm at the mercy of just random events that may take place and affect me. It feels like that, right? Here I am, I'm thrown here. I'm in this life, I'm in this world, and this might happen to me. And these people suddenly come and everything looks like it's just outside coming in. But the truth is, our consciousness draws in everything that happens to us in our life. It has a magnetic power to draw it in. We call it karma. The karma is also, we have to see it on an energetic level. You know, the relationships that you have, the people in your life, the things that are happening to you is drawn to you by your nature. A particular nature draws in certain things, and it also avoids certain things. So think about that. People that are around us, the ailments that we have in our body, the particular work that we do, the events that take place, it's consciousness drawing it all in. And so this is where the struggle should be in life, the consciousness. We try to fix everything externally. And we skip over, we don't realize this simple law that Krishna is explaining in this one verse, so powerful. This one verse outweighs so much knowledge in this material world. It's so, just this one verse, you understand that your consciousness creates your life and also your destination after dying. Why are we here in this material world? Sometimes Prabhupada would say, devotees would ask Prabhupada, why did Krishna send us to this material world? Why did Krishna create this material world? Prabhupada said, He did not create it, you created it. You created it. We created it because we have certain desires, inclinations, and then a world is created where we can try to fulfill those desires. So this is a complete reversal of how we normally think. And if it's truly grasped, then we stop fighting externally and we see what I have to do is purify my consciousness and encourage others to do the same. I have to become Krishna conscious and I have to give the message of Krishna consciousness to others. This becomes the greatest welfare work we can do. So this particular nature we have, it's a mix of things for all of us, right? We have some fortunate qualities, we have some misfortune that comes into our life. We have some good, we have some bad. We're all mixed in that way. But a devotee is not too concerned with how that all plays out. Okay, something good just came into my life. Okay, remain steady. Don't get too excited. You get too excited, then it sets you up for one that's taken away. And now you're depressed. And now you're devastated by losing it. So whatever comes into our life, something good, thank you, Krishna. How can I use this in your service? Something bad comes into your life, some misfortune, confronted with some difficulty. Again, we try to remain steady. Krishna, I don't know why this is here. Somehow, I know the cause is within me. I accept it. Show me the opportunity, even in this situation, to take shelter of you. So we become less concerned with the good and bad, so-called good and bad that comes into our life. We just let life unfold. Happiness and distress are like waves that just keep coming in the ocean of our life. It's already set. Just imagine that. It's already set, you know? You have a very good astrologer. If there's a very good astrologer, They can see everything from your birth. Just imagine that. As soon as you're born, the life, the material life, is all mapped out. You know, this suddenly, this year becomes very good for you, very fortunate. And 10 years later, you go through a difficulty. So don't give too much to that. Let it unfold. And the real thing is now to shift our consciousness at the lotus feet of Krishna. Now shift our consciousness towards devotional service, devotional practice. That's our freedom, to make that shift. But our freedom is not the good and the bad and the fortune and the misfortune that comes into our life. We think it is. But actually it's just like a seed. There are many seeds in our hearts. And as the time factor rolls on, those seeds start to fructify, then something comes into your life. Something's taken away in your life. So don't give all the attention there. Give the attention towards, okay, with all that happening, now take shelter of the Lord. So this is, you know, our karma. Think about karma. We set it in motion. We set karma in motion, and then when a reaction comes, we resist it. And we resent it. But we created it. You know, our karma comes to us as a whole, but we only want half. We want the so-called good half. But when the bad things come, we resist that and we fight against it and we resent life. We resent God for sending it. And that way we stay entangled in it. But with if anything that comes, if we can have this attitude, here it comes, don't resent it. Even if it's painful, even if it's difficult, don't resent it. Accept it. Accept it. I set it in motion, I accept the consequence. There's a nice verse later in the Gita. You know, think about it. If you resent things that are happening to you in life, if we resent it, what are we resenting? We're resenting life, we're resenting God, because this is His system. We're resenting, and we're also resenting ourselves, because we created something and now we're resisting the reaction. I put something in motion and I won't accept the reaction. So I'm also resenting part of myself. And if you accept it, if you accept everything that comes, you're accepting life, you're accepting God, and you're accepting yourself. A reaction is like you throw a boomerang. You know, you throw a boomerang out and it's way out there and it comes back to you. You catch it. You've accepted it. You sent it out, you caught it, it's done. But if we throw it out, it's coming back, and somehow I'm running away from it, resisting, fighting. All of our pain in life is coming from non-acceptance. Non-acceptance. So, Krishna, later, there's this nice verse, a couple of verses I wanted to read. 18th chapter, 61 and 62. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. This material nature is like a machine. It's like a programmed machine. And also the mind, don't forget, when it says here that the, you know, material energy is like a machine, don't forget that the subtle mind is also material. That's also like a machine. So what to do if everything is like, you know, I'm seated on this machine of material energy. It's within me. It's outside of me. So what do? Everything is already destined to happen. And well, how should I live then? So the next verse. Krishna says, surrender unto Him. Therefore, surrender unto Him utterly. Him means Krishna, the Supreme Lord. By His grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. So everything is happening like a machine. You cannot control it. But what to do then? You surrender completely to the Lord. You accept what life is offering, whatever it is, and you completely surrender. Take shelter, says here. Surrender unto Him utterly. This is what to do. So this can be our attitude to life. Whatever's happening in our material life, our attitude to it should be duty. I'm very dutiful. Whatever my responsibilities, whatever my obligations, I'm dutiful. And at the same time, I do what's good. I act with integrity in my material life. I try to take care of my responsibilities. And at the same time, I have to shift my consciousness now somewhere else. It's not just that. This is the Bhagavad Gita. It's all about, you know, varnashram, doing your duty. We see this again and again. And besides that, that's your material life. Now there has to be a shift in consciousness towards the lotus feet of Krishna. These two things. So we can't let Maya distract us. Maya has two components. Avaranatmika Shakti, which is a covering power. Maya means illusion. As soon as we're born, we're covered. We forget that we're eternal souls. So from the very birth, then there's a covering. That's one Shakti of Maya. Another Shakti is called Prakshepatmika Shakti, which means that even if you realize you're covered and now you want to make a change, Maya has another power that will now distract you in so many ways. You'll get distracted. We should ask that question to ourselves. What distracts me in life again and again? Where does my consciousness go? For somebody, it's sports. For somebody, it's politics. For somebody, it's crime. For somebody, it's fashion. What is it that keeps distracting me? There's a way these things can be connected to devotional service. So there's a way to link it. Link it. Maybe not crime. But there's a way to link these things to Krishna. But this, we should see that this is happening. There's a gradual shift that's taking place. So we want to be careful of what distracts us. I was with a man recently in the hospital, and when I first met him, I asked him, you know, this man is dying. And I asked him, you know, this is a question I ask everybody. This is the work I do as a chaplain, hospice chaplain. So I asked this man, what's the most important thing for you right now? He knows he has a prognosis of 6 months to live. And without hesitating, he said, God. I know that I just passing through this life, we're all just passing through. And he quoted something from the Bible and he said, God, this is what really I have to focus on now. So he said that. Of course, I appreciated that. And the next time I saw him, a couple weeks later, he was in the hospital and I went to see him. And I walked in and he was so disturbed. He said, oh, come, I need your help. My family is doing this and this person's doing that and this man owes me money. You have to help me find his phone number. You know, this, and I could see he was just so stressed out and he was restless and he had his notebook out and he's trying to find, looking up numbers and calling different things. He couldn't figure out his cell phone and he needed my help, and I tried the best I could to help him. But I was watching how this was going on. I was seeing the anxiety in his mind. He was trying to get all these things figured out. This person has to give me the money that he's owed me. And at some point, I just reminded him of what he told me when we first met. I said, sir, I just want to say, when I first met you and I asked you what was most important, you said, God. I just want to remind you, please don't take offense. I know you have things you have to figure out. But what will you do with that money if you get it back? You know, you have a few weeks, maybe months to live. You'll let go of it again. You're so anxious right now. Your mind is totally somewhere else. And I just watched, he kind of stopped and he just stared, not at me, but just directly at, like, kind of past me. And he just stopped. And he was just listening. I was like, you told me that God is most important to you. You have an opportunity now. You can put your mind on God. Don't let these things right now interfere. Don't let these things distract you. I'll help you however I can. I can call the social worker too, and you have to figure these things out. But don't let this, if you get the money or don't get the money, you're dying. What will you do? You take the money and give it up immediately. At death, we give up everything. So I was speaking like this to him, and he just was silent, didn't respond at all. And then I said, you know, it was time for me to leave, and I was just saying goodbye to him. And then finally, right before I left, he just looked up and he looked in my eyes and he says, "Thank you, I love you. I love you, man," he said. Just very... Now, the thing is, I don't know what happened. He passed away in the hospital a few days later, overnight. I wasn't around, I wasn't there. I don't know if he became anxious again. Because the point is, it's very hard to actually think of God like that at the end if we don't practice it during life. Perhaps there was no practice, this whole man's life was anxious, or so many anxieties and figuring things. So he knew in his heart, now I should focus on God. But we don't know if that actually happened. Right? We don't know, because if you live a certain way, then we die a certain way. If we live practicing, putting our consciousness on Krishna, especially in difficulties, then when death comes, it's been practiced. Now here we go. Krishna, I'm yours. I give myself to you at this time. You know, so it's difficult. Therefore, this chapter is all about that. I want to read another verse here, which is the verse right before the verse we read today, where Krishna is saying, fixing the mind on him as a practice. And the purport also is very nice. I'll read it. So this is text 5 of the 8th chapter. So Krishna says, "And whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt." In Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the importance of Krishna consciousness is stressed. Anyone who quits his body in Krishna consciousness is at once transferred to the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the purest of the pure. Therefore, anyone who is constantly Krishna conscious is also the purest of the pure. The word smaran, remembering, is important. Remembrance of Krishna is not possible for the impure soul who has not practiced Krishna consciousness and devotional service. Therefore, one should practice Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life. If one wants to achieve success at the end of his life, the process of remembering Krishna is essential. What is that process? Here, Prabhupada describes. Therefore, one should constantly and incessantly chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya has advised that one should be as tolerant as a tree. You see how that's thrown in here, like we were saying with life, when life becomes difficult, tolerance, acceptance. That's one side of it. And the other side is chant the holy name of the Lord. There may be so many impediments for a person. Nonetheless, tolerating all these impediments, one should continue to chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So at the end of one's life, one can have the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. If you look at this 8th chapter, if you remember what I said, the purpose, the theme of this 8th chapter, is how to attain the Supreme, how to actually connect to the Supreme Lord. So more than any other chapter, if you look at all the purports, Prabhupada again and again is giving the Maha Mantra. And every time it's fully written, rather than just chant Hare Krishna, it's always the full mantra. And again, because this is the way at the end of life, if we practice this now, then when that crucial time comes, it will be natural. That's what we want. We can take inspiration from Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev, at the very end of his life. Let's read this verse from Bhishma Dev. This is from First Canto Bhagavatam. Bhishma Dev said, "Let me now invest my thinking, feeling, and willing, which were so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties, in the all-powerful Lord Sri Krishna." You know, he's admitting, my mind was in so many other things. But now, let me stop all of that and completely put my mind on Krishna. How can we do that if we don't practice that throughout life? He was able to do that. You know, imagine how many responsibilities Bhishma Dev had. He was a warrior. He was a teacher. He was helping, instructing so many people. He was so engaged in worldly things, but he was also a devotee. And he was able at that moment to completely just turn his attention. Now, what is our practice to be able to do that? How do we practice that? It's the chanting. Think about it. When you chant, you're supposed to drop everything else going on in your life and just hear the sound of Krishna's name. There's your practice. The Bhishma is able to do it, and we're able to do it if we try that, if we make that attempt every day in our lives. Maybe 16 rounds is too much to imagine for you to do that the whole time. Start with one round. For one round, I'm going to take everything else out of my mind and just hear the sound of Krishna's name. You know, let me try that one round doing that. Let me try two rounds. Okay, then I get distracted. Let me come back. You'll get another opportunity. You'll get another opportunity tomorrow to put everything else aside and just chant the name of Krishna. Imagine if we really try that. It's like to chant japa is like a heroic effort every day. It takes that decision, a very deep decision of the heart. And what's our attitude when we chant? When my spiritual master initiated me, he said, your name is Ghanashyam Das. Ghanashyam means that Krishna is like a beautiful dark cloud. He said, so you are Ghanashyam Das, which means you should be in the mood of the Chataka bird. You know the Chataka bird? The Chataka bird, it said that there's a bird who, when it sees the dark cloud in the sky, it goes on top of a branch and it opens its mouth, because the Chataka bird won't take water from anything, any place on the earth. Even though water is available, it will only drink water that comes from above. So this is a bird, and the Vaishnavas are like the Chataka, which means that there's so many ways we can enjoy ourselves in this world, but we try to resist. And we say, no, only from Krishna. When that drop comes, the drop of mercy comes, I'll just be waiting and ready with my mouth open to receive that one drop. And sometimes clouds come and then they pass and there's no rain. So the Chataka has to be very tolerant. Okay, no rain. I still won't get the water from the earth. I'll still wait for water from above. So when we chant, this is the consciousness actually. It's not that I'm going to, you know, sit down now and I'm going to do this. I'm going to chant with bhakti. You can't do that. Bhakti Devi. Bhakti Devi is a goddess. The goddess of... chanting means to invite Bhakti Devi to appear while you chant. So it looks like you're doing something. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I have to make a decision to do something and I feel like I'm chanting. I'm chanting Krishna's name. No, not exactly. We're creating an opportunity. And when Krishna's pleased, when Bhakti Devi is pleased with this, the mood of the Chataka bird, only by your mercy, only if you give me a drop can I, you know, this is described by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. He says that this is an offense when you chant, is to think that the holy name is Jiva Deen. Jiva means the tongue. Jiva Deen means to think that the holy name is under the control of your tongue. That's an offense. But it's actually, the truth is that it's namadim, that my tongue is under the control of the name. My tongue is under the control, the name is in control, and my tongue is just there trying to give a platform that the name appears. Not that I can control and produce the name. So this is a different approach to chanting. You know, you sit down and just think of that bird, that Chataka bird. It cannot get the water itself. It won't get the water itself. This is called Arohavad. Arohavad means the path of trying to achieve mercy yourself by your own accomplishments, by your own efforts. Aroha. But the path of the Vaishnava is Avaroha. Avaroha means the descending process, not the ascending. I'm going to ascend up and reach the spiritual world. No. I'm completely receptive. You know, I'm completely receptive. So chanting is a receptive state, which is crying out for the Lord to descend through his name, crying out for, well, even when you're doing active service, you still imagine the chataka bird. Wow, I'm doing this though, right? I'm achieving this. No, you're doing something. But in a state of dependence for Bhakti Devi to appear, when Bhakti Devi appears in your heart, then you'll feel the bhakti in the service you're doing. You'll taste the joy of that. And you realize it has nothing to do with me. It's just, I'm just inviting, I'm hoping, I'm praying, I'm eager, but I cannot do it. So if we live with this practice of chanting and in this right mindset, then we can know that at the time of death, we've done it so much, and now here we go, completely letting go. Krishna, I belong to you, I'm your servant. Whatever your will is, I surrender. How can I serve you? I don't know how I can serve even in this condition, but I'm asking, how can I serve even now? Devotees find ways to serve even when they're on their deathbed. Bhakti Tirtha Swami would speak like that, that I've given so many lectures, I've gone to so many places, but now that I'm dying of cancer, I see so much more opportunity. I am so much more able to give Krishna to others. This is Krishna's mercy. He's giving so many opportunities for me to serve now. So, I just want to end by saying this chapter ends, eighth chapter. And Krishna describes two people. Some, when their consciousness is just absorbed in this world and things of this world, then they have to return. This is called the path of darkness. This is also the path of light, which is when, instead of this cycle, you get out of the cycle, you exit the cycle. So you might think, well, the devotee is the one who exits the cycle, right? No. And then the next verse, Krishna says, and my devotee cares neither for neither of these two paths. My devotee doesn't care about the cycle of reincarnation, also doesn't care about getting out of the cycle of reincarnation. My devotee is simply fixed, happily, in my service. Whether in heaven, hell, reincarnation, freedom or not, whatever it is, the devotee has achieved a state of consciousness which is eternally connected to the Lord, so the devotee doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where I go, what happens. How beautiful is that, to live in that consciousness? And there's an opportunity for all of us by chanting the holy name. So we'll stop here. Any comments? Thoughts, reflections, questions? Maybe just a couple minutes left.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. I was just trying to understand when you were saying whatever comes to us, we should learn to tolerate. And, you know, we put it out and then we get it back like the boomerang. And this, there's so many samskaras, so like the particles on the lake. You see.
Yeah.
But something I've been contemplating quite a bit recently, like how you know, okay, something's come to me, a situation, and is this favorable for my spiritual life? It's not black and white often.
Yeah.
And. Say it's a mixture,
yes.
But we might feel yes, it's some karma there. Like, but I can change that. I could try to change it, or maybe not. If I try to change it, it might not be good, or might not be possible. I came across a verse. I believe it was this pastime of Prithu Maharaj. I don't know if you know that verse. It's one who's trying to adjust the material situation enters into the darkest region.
Yes.
Roughly, like yes. Wording. So I was wondering about that, or do you just sit and wait it out and see if something will change?
Yeah, so here's one way you can look at that. So let's say something bad comes into your life. So think of this. Think of yes, no, yes. The first yes is just you have to accept it. It's happened, right? It's happening. But the no that follows that is that now you can think, let me not respond from ego. I have an inclination to respond from react from my nature, my svabhava. Let me hold back on that. And then the third yes is now let me act from what I know of Krishna consciousness. Let me act from guidance of devotees. Let me respond in the right way from what I've learned. So the first yes has to be there no matter what happens. There has to be an initial acceptance of everything. But now, you may not just, that doesn't mean you just sit back and do nothing. You have to accept the fact that it happened. And now we have to see what my response is going to be. I don't want a response from ego, false ego. I don't want a response from my own selfishness. I want to see what I've learned, what devotees are sharing, get their guidance. And I'm going to respond now in that way. So think of yes, no, yes. Because it has to, first of all, everything has to be accepted. It doesn't mean doing nothing now. It means now let me refrain from doing, acting from the ego. And instead let me act from my spirit. In this way. So that's one way of just responding to the whatever comes to us in life. The more we just, you see, like you were mentioning that verse from Prithu, the more we skip that part and we just start reacting, this has happened, now I react, that's what entangles and creates more reactions. So there has to be a pause. There has to be a moment of, yes, Krishna, this has come, I accept it. Now, let me act from a Krishna conscious perspective and not from my ego. That's the next thing to follow. And we can take guidance of devotees of how to do that. I want to stop here because I don't want to keep all of you from having prasadam. So, but I'm happy if anyone has anything after to also talk. So, Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhagavad Gita ki, Hare Krishna.